Hey, y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start here in Miami. All right, and this is Super Bowl. It's nothing like I expected. The Chiefs are the rock stars, and the 49ers are the indie band with the great lead singer, Kyle Shanahan. Super Bowl 54 is Beatlemania, featuring the Kansas City Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes is John Lennon. Andy Reid is Paul McCartney. Travis Kelce is Ringo Starr. And Tyrann Mathieu is George Harrison. I wasn't prepared for this. My mother moved to Kansas City in 1984, my senior year of high school. I moved to Kansas City a decade later to be the lead sports columnist at the local newspaper. I've been following and rooting for the Chiefs for 36 years. I thought one day the Chiefs would make it to the Super Bowl. I envision them being an underdog story led by a group of mostly no-name guys and a nasty defense. I never dreamed we'd be the Beatles of football. It's almost like I need a daily reminder who the Chiefs are playing this Sunday. All of the major headlines and stories are about the Chiefs. Is Patrick Mahomes destined to be the greatest quarterback of all time? Is Andy Reid the second best coach after Bill Belichick? Is Kansas City's offense the best we've seen since the St. Louis Rams' greatest show on turf? The Chiefs are the loud, arrogant team overflowing with swagger. Tyreek Hill isn't afraid to say no one can stop KC's passing attack. Frank Clark said he's looking forward to holding the Lombardi Trophy more than facing George Kittle. There's so much noise and hype coming out of Kansas City that the normal noise and hype made by Richard Sherman is being drowned out. The Chiefs feel like a team out of New York or Los Angeles more than a team from flyover country. The whole thing is fun, but it's also a little bit disconcerting. I was expecting Kansas City's next Super Bowl team to feel like Hootie and the Blowfish, not the Beatles or Wu-Tang Clan. It took me 10 years to figure out Hootie's real name was Darius Rucker, and I still can't name one other member of the group. Hell, for all I know, Marcellus was in Hootie and the Blowfish. Other than Hootie, I couldn't recognize another Blowfish. The Chiefs were supposed to be Hootie and the Blowfish, led by Gunther Cunningham, Elvis Gerback, and Donnell Bennett. Mahomes, Kelce, Tyreek Hill, Andy Reid, Tyrann Mathieu, all of this feels like a dream. Something too good to be true. I'm a little worried all the hype and the noise are going to give San Francisco an emotional edge. Maybe it's superstition or paranoia, but I'm worried this dream is going to turn into a nightmare. All right, Marcellus, get us rolling. Mm. Should I be concerned the Chiefs are getting too much hype?
Let's stay in the music analogy. It's time for you to face the music, brother. It does not matter what's going on in storyline and media when it comes to playing the game of football. This game of football is about preparation. And that preparation is the separation. And when you're in those moments of truth, I don't care what people say about you. I don't care what people think about you. I don't care what you think about yourself. Are you ready to execute in that moment of truth? I sat down with Barry Sanders one time and just, you know, marveling at his greatness. And I
said, just one time?
Just one time. Just one time. And I remember him saying, you know the difference between a 6-yard loss and a 60-yard touchdown run? 6 inches. Gap discipline. Eye discipline. You out of position. That's the difference. Not 6 media requests, not 6 articles written. It's about being ready in this moment. We've seen media darlings go out there and have amazing success. You also saw them wet the bed. So in a situation like this, I would just go out there. If I'm the Kansas City Chiefs, I'm not counting what's happening on the outside sphere. It doesn't matter if they introduce the 49ers first or introduce us first. You can look at that 2 different ways. If we go first, they know we're the stuff. If we go last, they're saving the best for last. It's all a story that you tell yourself, but make sure you tell yourself the most important story. Be ready for those moments of truth.
Well, if I'm a Chiefs fan, I have to have a ton of trepidation going into this game. You cannot buy into the hype of selling offense, selling touchdowns, and selling long passes, and Mahomes becoming the greatest quarterback of all time. This 49ers defense is more than capable of dismantling that Kansas City offense. Ooh. And furthermore,
dismantling. That's a strong word.
Dismantling?
Dismantling that Kansas City offense. And furthermore, what could actually happen and could be even more of a factor in this game is we're really not talking about the 49ers offense. People are not talking about the matchup as it applies to offenses versus offenses. It's not apples to apples. This is an apples to orange comparison. Everybody thinks it's the Niners defense versus the Kansas City offense. And what I'm telling you right now, you better pay attention to the way the 49ers have been running the football. Pay attention to the way Garoppolo has been protecting the ball and his confidence level. I think it's going to be a very, very hard task for Kansas City to be able to beat this 49ers team.
I would say this. I think, one, it's really important how you hear that noise. If you're the Chiefs, do you buy into that hype? Do you listen to that noise? Do you let it affect you? Do you get overconfident? Because that's the worst thing that can happen to you. Here's the thing that I think would settle me down if I was a Chiefs fan. And I'm not, because I hate the Chiefs with a white-hot intensity of 1,000 suns. So, wow. But if I was a Chiefs fan, this is what would calm me a little bit. They have overcome adversity of a 24-0 24-0 lead and a 17-0 lead. And they have stayed true to who they are. You know, the whole game plan when you face the Chiefs is, hey, the normal game has 11 to 12 possessions. Can we keep it down to 8? If we can keep it down to 8, you know, then because we possess the ball, we run the ball, we're San Francisco, then we're all right. Well, what happens if Kansas City scores 6 or 8 possessions? It doesn't matter that you keep them down to 8 possessions. So, listen, if they had just come out and trucked both Houston and Tennessee from the start, if they never faced any adversity, I would be much more concerned about the hype that is going on right now. But because they've had to overcome those deficits, because they've had to overcome and fight through, that potential pitfall, it doesn't concern me that they're going to let that kind of let their egos grow in what they've accomplished so far.
We would both agree, though, I think we would all agree, Houston and Tennessee, far inferior football teams to the Kansas City Chiefs. San Francisco is not a far inferior football team. Right. I think the Chiefs are better, but it's so close. If someone argues the other side, they're legitimate as well.
I would disagree. I think San Francisco is a better football team.
I think
Kansas City has a more dynamic quarterback and a better offense. A more dynamic offense.
And so I think we would all agree. If it's 17-0 San Francisco at any point in this game, Chiefs ain't winning.
That's going to be a tough hill.
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't go that far. I will say this, that the media is not allowed in the meeting rooms. And let's not confuse that these players are talking about everything we're going to bring up plus some in full preparation of this game. And it's amazing that right now, if you look at the 49ers as an opponent, you're like trying to pick your poison because that running game is outstanding. And then you talk about Jimmy Garoppolo. Everyone has something to say negative about Jimmy Garoppolo, except he puts points up on the board. Number one scoring, we talk about the Chiefs. Number two scoring since he's been in the league, Jimmy Garoppolo. He could be your game manager. He could be the one to exploit you if you don't respect him as a passer. So I just look at the storylines are obviously going to be for the Chiefs. They're more explosive, and they've never been here. We're selling subscriptions up here, brother. We've seen the 49ers here 7 years ago. Who's talking about that? That's yesterday news.
I've never seen, in 36 years of following Chiefs, a team that talks the way this Chiefs team does. And that's what's disconcerting to me. Mm. And listen, you hear coaches say all the time, you're reading your press clipping.
Right,
people get caught up in that, and I hope it works. I hope
17-0 is a game over.
Yeah.
I'm gonna tell you why.
You would have said that last week, 10-0. 24-0. Everybody.
Not with the 49ers. With the 49ers, I'm gonna tell you why 17-0 means game. You got some dogs up front.
Yeah. Yeah,
maybe even some lions, tigers, and bears.
Oh my.
Right. All right. But they don't necessarily come after you and are able to get to you. It's more of an experience. You're at the zoo. You get up 17 points, you're not at the zoo, you're in a safari, all right? And once you're in a safari, as safe as you think you are, you can still get picked off. And I'm telling you right now, though, that defensive front would be off the chain with a 17-point lead. I would not want to see any team right now in the NFL going against that defensive front with a 17-spotted point lead.
Again, that's my concern. The Chiefs, I was talking to I was talking to Eric Mangini in the green room before, and we were talking about, hey, the Chiefs have been a little sloppy early in game, dropping balls,
right?
You know, falling behind, obviously, dropping punts and things like that. They've been sloppy early, and again, it's not. The Chiefs may be blessed with too much talent, because sometimes you don't have to concern yourself with all the details. Mm. And I think the details will matter this Sunday, and I think that this whole narrative of the Chiefs being the greatest thing to hit football and kind of having this New York swagger to them where they're the Joe Namath or they're the Richard Sherman, that's how this team feels, like Richard Sherman is the leader of this team, and it's not a detailed-oriented team, and it scares me.
I will tell you, you look at just the Niners in general defensively, and I think this is I'm a believer in the keep it simple, stupid process, right? I'm a believer in this is what we are, this is how we got here. When you look at Robert Saleh, the defensive coordinator of the San Francisco 49ers, they essentially play, you know, a form of cover three. He brought it with Seattle from him, right? A matchup three. And when you are simplistic in what you do, and everybody is on par and on the same page with what you do, and you have the beasts up front that they have, they can line up five first-round draft picks as a defensive line. They can line them up and they can come after you that way. But when you run one thing and you run it exceptionally well, it eliminates your ability to have to think. It eliminates your ability to make mistakes, and it lets you play as a defensive player faster.
You can play faster.
And that's to me, it gives them a slight advantage from that standpoint of what everybody else does, trying to say, hey, are we going to trick Mahomes? You're not going to trick Mahomes. You're not going to show him something that he's, even if you get him initially on the initial read, on the pre-snap look, Mahomes can hold the ball, and he's, I used to say that Aaron Rodgers was the greatest off-platform thrower I've ever seen. I think Mahomes has usurped him as the greatest off-platform thrower I've ever seen. So even if you trick him initially, he can hold the ball, he can scramble around, he can make a play with his feet or with his hand. So I think the simplistic nature of San Francisco gives them, you know, an advantage compared to the other teams that Kansas City has faced in the playoffs.
Yeah, think about the expectations to be dominant. I think that's what they suffer from in the first two rounds. They were supposed to dominate Houston. They're supposed to dominate Tennessee. They're the Kansas City Chiefs. And that's a pressure to be perfect. And when you're fully confident, you may skip a fundamental step in the pursuit of being perfect or going out there and dominating. Then you take a collective breath as a team's like, hold on, man. Let's just do the little things. That's going to add up to something big. And that's what happens in these situations. I see that. This team has confidence. And that confidence, when it's matched with praise, when it comes from outsiders, it doesn't do anything to you. It does something to the guy who's not as confident. He may start reading his press clippings because he's now thinking of a new identity. Oh, I'm this instead of who I really am. I think this team led by Patrick Mahomes is going to go out there. And this time, because they're not expected to dominate, they're not expected to go out there and beat down the 49ers. They're going to be ready for every single moment.
I think I know where you're at, so I'm going to start with LeVar. Do you like Kansas City coming into this game with this much confidence, swagger, the attitude that they're showing?
I do. And the reason why I like the confidence and the attitude is it's something that, one, they've brought an excitement to their market that has not existed there. They've been a cusp team for so long, and I think that they've given not only themselves a lot of hope and confidence, they're giving their community a lot of confidence. I think if you project and you portray a strong front, a confident front, if you go into it and you win it, I think that the amount of excitement that comes from and resonates from that is probably unmeasurable. So I think it's a good thing for them to do
that. Mark, you like the attitude?
Yeah, I do, as a matter of fact. I mean, there's such a difference between confidence and arrogance. Mm-hmm. See, confidence is bred from your ability, knowing that you put the work in and knowing that you're talented enough because you put that work in. Arrogance comes from a place of fear. Mm-hmm. I haven't put the work in. Exactly. I'm not that talented. So let me puff out my chest and let me talk. Now, I'm an offensive lineman, so nothing good can happen to you when you play offensive line in a football game. There is nothing good. It's all 100% bad. So I am, you know, I'm Chicken Little, the sky is falling. I'm Horton, here's a who, man. I'm always nervous about those things.
But like Kansas, being a nightclub.
Right, but Kansas City, right? Kansas City, to me, has earned the right to have that confidence right now and have some swagger because what they've done, not only over the last 2 years, but what they've done and overcome in the playoffs.
Doesn't it beat the alternative? Oh, shucks, I'm so happy we're here. Wow, how did we find our way to Miami? I like that because some boxers want to win the face-off. Ooh, I'm looking in your eye, I'm ready. And some just want to win the rounds, win the damn fight.
I like being an underdog.
We talk about physical fitness a lot, but there's another side to the game that's just as important. I'm talking about mental fitness. Calm, the number one app for sleep and meditation, has teamed up with LeBron James to help you train your mind. LeBron and Calm know that your mind is like any other muscle in your body, and Calm can help you train your brain so you sleep better, have less stress, and perform at your best. For LeBron James, sleep is an important part of his mental fitness routine. He says, "Getting good sleep and finding time to rest is one of the most valuable things I can do for my body and mind." And if you head to calm.com/sports40, you'll get 40% off a Calm premium membership. With Calm, you have access to nature scenes LeBron loves and so much more, like sleep stories and meditations. For a limited time, our listeners can join LeBron in using Calm with a 40% discount to an annual membership at calm.com/sports40. Unlock content to help you focus, ease stress, and sleep better. Get started at calm.com/sports40. That's calm.com/sports40.
Whitlock and Wiley, LeVar Arrington is back with us. Joining us now is Fox Sports analyst TJ Houshmandzadeh. Let's return to Kobe Bryant, whose passing this week shocked the world, but has sparked an outpouring of love and remembrance for the Lakers legend. One fan started a change.org petition suggesting the NBA change its logo from the image of Jerry West to one of Kobe Bryant. It has already garnered nearly 2 million signatures, and the Greek Freak said he thought the idea was awesome. What say we? You like this idea?
No.
Really?
Amazing, tremendous gesture that is not going to happen. One, a little backstory here. As the logo was created with Commissioner Walter Kennedy, J. Walter Kennedy, and Alan Siegel, who created the logo. Do you know that the NBA officially does not even say that that is Jerry West as the logo? You know why? Because they don't want to pay Jerry West. Simple as that. They don't want to pay Jerry West. And everyone knows in our world that icons get richer in death than they do in life. The estate of Kobe Bryant. There's going to be an issue of legalities, financial reasons and concerns. Jerry West says in his nicest way, it's complicated being the logo. He has not gained a dollar of residual from being the logo despite being the logo. So now moving it forward, many people on record who were part of this creation process looking at it forward says, one day a commissioner may change it, but I don't think they're going to change it for an individual. They're going to do something that respects the sport at large. But this is something that really is financially expensive. It will bring in legalities. It's more than just a tremendous gesture for a tremendous player. It's deeper than that.
Would it be a good idea? Yeah, and they should change it. And I'm going to tell you why. Man, Jerry West has been a logo for 50 years, since 1979. The players now, they know Jerry West for two things, the logo and being a good GM. That they don't know him from playing basketball. They don't know who Jerry West is playing basketball. Not today's player. That's number one. Number two is today's player. The majority of these guys grew up idolizing Kobe. And when you get arguably the best player in the league, Giannis say, oh, man, that would be a good look. You have to seriously consider that.
The only
thing
you got to think about, TJ, and I understand you come at everything from a player's perspective.
Right.
The logo is really about fans. And so it's great that the players love it, blah, blah, blah.
And the majority of the NBA fans are young kids that would want... It sucks for when somebody, something negative to happen with Kobe's passing for them to say, oh, let's do this. But when you think, no, today's player, they know of Jerry West as being a GM. Now, to me, it's only fitting. In 96, he traded Vlade Divac to Charlotte for Kobe Bryant. To me, it's only fitting. Like, it's...
Passing of the
torch. You're passing the torch. I'm with it.
Based off of Marcellus's logic, I went with no. I said in reality, no. In fantasy, yes.
Right.
But as I thought about it more,
okay.
And I started thinking about some of the issues that the NBA has ran into this year that Whitlock has made very clear in some of his Whitlocks. If you're going to take a moment to rebrand and reboot and try to clear your image or create a different image and go in a different direction, when you take a happening like what has just happened with Kobe Bryant and what Kobe represented, I don't see it being as egregious as it may initially seem to say, no, don't do it. I really think that you could make this into something. Again, I said on the show yesterday that Kobe Bryant's legacy as a basketball player, void of anything else, as a basketball player, is that of on the level of Michael Jordan. Could I see the Jumpman being a logo for the NBA? I could.
I couldn't, because that would be way too expensive.
I could.
But let me answer the question.
I get it.
Let me answer the question.
It costs to floss.
Yeah, I agree with you in terms of rebranding. The NBA is about to pivot. Adam Silver's talking about a midseason tournament. They're talking about reducing the number of games. The NBA is looking to rebrand itself and to pivot a little bit in a new direction. And so I think, again, if you do a logo that looks like Kobe, the way they've done with Jerry West, because it's just a silhouette.
Oh, Rob Kobe's estate?
Yeah, pretty much.
But again.
Yes or no?
But no, because...
Pretty much.
Because, wow. Again, first of all, they'll never admit to it, whatever the silhouette is.
Yeah.
And most people, is that Jordan or is that Kobe?
Okay.
Because who are they really mimicking?
They've done it to Jerry West for so long.
Right. They could do the same thing to whoever. Yeah, just a silhouette.
I have a machine gun of responses. First of all, what is Kobe's signature logo? What is that? Is it him tearing open the chest when he was winning
championships? No, I think it's some kind of shot.
A fadeaway?
Yeah, I think
Okay, we already taken a little bit off of what the logo is supposed to represent, which is brand recognition for a business, an unspoken language. This logo says that. It's like static motion, as they describe it. It speaks volumes. And best logos are not fashionable. They're not fresh. They're old. They're dusty. But you know what it says. So look at Apple when Steve Jobs passed away. Being respectful, I know it's called Apple, so they kept the Apple, but no conversations or movement to making it Steve Jobs' form. So this is the same thing. And then in the same articles that I've read, Alan Siegel and others were saying, what would it be if it was MJ? What if it's LeBron? What if it's Kobe? You can't do that because there are like 50 generational superstars that will raise their hand quietly, respectfully, and say, what about me? So this situation, I think, is going to stay static. They're going to have a lot of conversations, but I don't think anything moves.
Whitlock and Wiley, joined now by Fox Sports NFL analysts Eric Mangini and Jeff Schwartz, whose brother Mitch will be starting to right tackle for my Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday, protecting my man Patrick Mahomes. Time now for a big story presented by Hyundai. Let's talk about Mahomes. Speculation is heating up around the league that the quarterback is soon headed for a huge payday, with a lot of talk that he could end up as the NFL's first $200 million man. Mahomes no doubt deserves the money, but there is concern that a contract worth $40 million or so a year could hamstring the Chiefs moving forward. Would a contract of that heft hurt the Chiefs?
No, it wouldn't hurt the Chiefs. Give you guys a little fact knowledge on this Super Bowl. This is the widest disparity that we've seen in the Super Bowl in terms of spending of two opponents. You have the 49ers, who spent $221 million in cap space and other things, and they're in the Super Bowl. And the team that spent the least are your Kansas City Chiefs at 167. And that's my point. You can spend the most and be here. You can spend the least and be here. It doesn't matter. At one time, the quarterback of the 49ers was the highest paid player in the NFL. And they were still able to build from that roster to this roster that is now Super Bowl worthy. So it's different ways to skin the cat. Whatever way you want to skin it, there are still ways you could have a roster that's constructed that could be a Super Bowl opponent.
Well, when you look at this, spending $200 million on Patrick Mahomes, you're happy to do it. And there's so many players that you're unhappy to spend what you have to spend for them, especially in free agency.
I've seen your contract.
Yeah, we're all unhappy with that. But the
that's right.
But the gist of it, or the crux of it, is if you have a guy like him who produces the way that he does, eventually you're going to have to pay him, but you're satisfied because you know what he brings to the table, and he's a force multiplier. Now, from a logical standpoint, paying someone who's the exact same person a lot more money, yeah, it does hurt what you can do because the resources are limited, but at least you're putting the money into someone that can allow you to compete for a championship every year.
It's going to hurt them in building enough talent like we've seen with a bunch of other teams, but Pat Mahomes is that good, it does not matter. Pay him whatever he wants. I'd give him like a 10-year deal, $400 million, just spread it out over 10 years. I don't know if he's going to take that deal. And then just know that you're locked in your quarterback for 10 years and you figure everything else out. They've drafted well recently too, which is an important part of paying someone that much money. You have to draft well and hit when guys are on the rookie contracts like they're doing with some of their defensive players, like they've done with a couple offensive linemen, like they've done with Hill and Kelsey and Hardman and all these guys. But Mahomes is that special to where you have to pay him first of all, and even if you pay him a lot of money and you're not as talented maybe at other places, he can win you enough games where it does not matter. He is that special of a player.
I'm certainly for paying him, and I would even chip in. but there is like this stat out there that, you know, Brady's like the highest paid quarterback to ever win a Super Bowl, and that was like at $20.5 million. And so the way to win a Super Bowl is right now when you have Patrick Mahomes on the cheap. You've paid for very good offensive tackles. You were able to go out and get Frank Clark. You brought in Tyrann Mathieu. You overpaid Anthony Hitchens. You know, they've done a lot of, you've paid Tyreek Hill. I'm not sure where they're at with Travis Kelce, but they're going to have to pay him. And so I think it's the right thing to do to pay him, but I do think it makes the job of being general manager and head coach more difficult after you pay him.
But with a guy like that, he's a force multiplier. So everybody.
Explain what you mean by that.
So what I mean by that is when one human being can affect those around him in a positive way. And Tom Brady's a force multiplier. It doesn't matter who plays with him. He makes them better. He makes average guys look good or play better. And Patrick's the same way. He makes his offensive line look better than they necessarily are. He'll make younger players better because of the things that he can do. So that's a helpful component of that. What I get frustrated with is when you pay a quarterback market value, which every time we pay a quarterback, we're a little bit shocked by what it is, and then we talk about we need to surround him with weapons. Like you can't have it both ways. If you want to be the guy to whom much is given, much is expected, you need to be able to make the people around you better, and that's what he does, different than some other high-paid quarterbacks.
Rhetorical question here. Is Patrick Mahomes better than Jimmy G? Yeah. Okay, done. All right, so Jimmy G's on a team that is 2-14. He comes to a situation that was 2-14, becomes the highest paid player the year after that, 6-10, gets injured, 4-12, 13-3, they're in the Super Bowl. They built around him as the highest paid player in the league. And you can do it the way that you do it, like the 49ers do it. You build up the middle. Running backs, they're cheaper. Fullbacks, 49ers have a good one. Oh, let's stay in the line. They're a little cheaper. Don't build on the outsides. Cornerback, wide receivers. You got an issue there because
tight ends are a bit
tight ends up the middle. Yeah. That's my point. So there's a way to go out there and slice it up and still take care of your MVP, but also make sure you give them proper resources.
But fairness, there are four bad years in San Francisco where they had really high draft picks.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they hit on some guys in the fifth round. You know, Kittle was a fifth rounder. They hit on some guys too in the draft. Yeah, they did pass on Patrick Mahomes. We don't really talk about that. So yeah, you can build that way, but nobody wants to go through those 4 years of really bad teams to get the top draft picks.
One other wild card in this is the new CBA, which will come out eventually in a year or two, right? So this might be a situation where the players get more money, the cap might jump, we have new TV deals coming up. So $40 million a year might not seem like, it might seem a lot now, but in a year or two, it's really a bargain.
Jeff, I've been talking to the fans back here. You're a force multiplier.
Yes.
Has Jeff not made me look a lot better? I mean, wouldn't everybody agree? He's definitely a force multiplier. Good to have you here.
TurboTax is here to help this tax season by making tax filing easier for you. They've made it their mission to give you all the tools and advice you need to get your taxes done with confidence, like making uploading your W-2 as easy as taking a picture. Just use your phone or tablet to simply snap a picture of your W-2 and then watch your information appear in the right place in your tax return. You can be sure you're filing your taxes correctly while at the same time making sure you're getting the best possible refund. TurboTax. All people are tax people.
Time now for Darnell's question of the day.
It's Darnell. My question of the day.
All right, welcome back to Speak for Yourself. Whitlock and Wiley. TJ Husmanzada is back with us. And now we're joined by Ball State and Baltimore Ravens finest, wide receiver Willie Snead. Willie Snead in the house. You know I love Ball State. I'm in heaven right now.
Willie Snead.
All right, Darnell, I heard you got a special question of the day. Take it away, homeboy.
Yeah, man, let's go ahead and talk some Ball State. Willie's a Cardinal legend, man, no doubt. But he's not the only one on set today. You got your boy, who you know balled out in Must
Talking
In.
Come on, me?
Come on, me. We're going to get to you, though. I know you was pretty good in the 60s or 70s, I believe. We all had pretty good careers, and if you look at these stats, yeah. Willie was pretty good in a classroom. A 4.0, Willie? I love you, but I don't know about that. But anyway, I got the 3-3, and Whitlock, not so much. But Willie and I definitely did a little better on the field, but I'm clearly losing the most important category, the salary. Oh. So I'm going to toss this to you, Willie. How would you rank us as Ball State legends? Me, you, and Whitlock, man. Keep it real.
You know, I'm going to keep it real. I'm going to give it to the vet.
There you go. That's the respect you need to give me, Darnell.
He lying.
That's how the young folks are supposed to respect their elders.
We got the fans here. He gonna lie on air.
Hey, man, I give it to the vet, man. But me and you, we put in some years at Ball State.
We did. Two bowl games.
Y'all went to bowl games. I didn't. Man.
I mean, look, let's be real. Somebody has to be objective up here. Right there. Me and you, TJ.
Yeah.
One of y'all still playing. One of y'all look like y'all can still play, and then Whitlock is here. So we got a booster in the building. I got to go Willie Snead. It's funny y'all GPAs actually align to how good you guys really were. Whitlock, what's up, man? Like, 2-2?
I was a free man.
You engineer?
Huh? A little bit.
Yeah, I'm about to say, it was based on receiving, right? Based on reception, right? So no I go drop. With you, Willie, first.
All right.
That's easy, man.
Yeah.
Number one. Because your salary is so low, I'm going to throw you number two. That's why. So I got to put Whitlock in
the
basement.
Let's get to the real.
Right.
Let's get to the real. What happened in the playoffs, man?
Dang.
We wanted to see Lamar versus Patrick Mahomes.
Man. Oh, man. Dude, I'll just say the Tennessee Titans were a really good team. They were ready to go. I mean, they were feeding off that Patriots win. And I think coming off the bye and getting down early, you know, that really hurt us and it put us in a position we weren't ready to be in. And then from there, we were just trying to play catch up. And we just didn't get back into the game like we really wanted to.
Yeah, they say playoff football is plan B football because both teams are good. So plan A versus plan A gets neutralized at times, but then you get into plan B. What did you guys see on that field that you didn't anticipate, you didn't see in film study, but all of a sudden it's a reality?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the Tennessee Titans were a really good team. And when we didn't get those fourth down conversions, I think it hurt us. And then they went up top quick. And we just didn't get into a rhythm like we were all season. And that's what really hurt us. And when we got down, we were trying to get in that rhythm again. We tried to get into it in the second half, but it really wasn't going in our favor. And it was tough. It was really tough.
So, halftime, it's a one possession game, 14-6. Yeah. Mm. What was the message at halftime? It's no need to panic. We score, we're right back in this game. So what was the message at halftime?
It was that same exact message. Don't panic, we right here, we right where we want to be. It's 0-0. You know, we just got to come out and play our brand of football. And, you know, when we didn't get that fourth down conversion and we gave him the ball again, that's when Derrick Henry just started to light it up. I feel like the defense did a great job for the most part containing him. But in that second half, I feel like that's when Derrick Henry started to come alive. And our offense, we were just getting down some most. So it's like we still playing catch up from there.
Willie, on Marcellus was the first guy, I think, really nationally that was like, Lamar Jackson is going to be the next big thing. It took me some time to see it from him as a thrower. And then the next thing that I saw that made me like, holy cow, I gotta jump on board. He started wearing these shirts, work harder. His energy seems very humble, very team oriented. He's not flossy like I thought he might be. And that made me jump on board with Lamar with both feet, like, holy cow, his attitude and play match up together. Is he as humble and as into hard work as much as he seems from out in Los Angeles watching y'all?
Absolutely. And even behind closed doors, it's like the guy is always wanting to get better. And, you know, when you have a guy like that at the helm that wants to get better each and every day and expects guys around him to be on that same level, you can't help yourself but to get better. And, you know, he's a great kid. He's young. He's only like 22. He's still got so much more to grow in this game. But from everything that he's done this past season, it's just he's kind of just setting the standard for how he's going to play and how future quarterbacks are probably going to play this game.
Now, I can't say it loud enough how amazing Lamar Jackson is, but there's still doubters. There's still naysayers. Yeah. Year one, he's in Flacco's offense, and he evolves. Year two, to an MVP. What do you think's the next step? What's necessary for his evolution?
I think we just got to continue to prove that passing game. I mean, I'm going to say he has trouble throwing the ball because he does. He throws it everywhere. But I just think, like, route concepts and scheme, our scheme as an offense needs to just progress for him to be able to evolve into a quarterback that we all know he can be. I mean, I feel like he's a great passer. He's got taken great strides in doing that. But his run ability is just, it's unmatched right now. And I feel like that's where people get captured up in his run ability, that they don't see the throwing that it could possibly be, and it will be. I just think our passing game, as much as it can improve, we will improve and he will improve.
So now, we're here for the Super Bowl. Yeah. You guys played the 49ers, who you lost, when you played the Chiefs, who you beat. Now, being a wideout, everybody talks about San Francisco's defense. What problems are Kansas City's defense going to present in the secondary to San Francisco's wideouts?
I think the Chiefs play a lot of man, and they got a really good secondary, young secondary, a lot of skilled players. Tyrann Mathieu, a couple of the corners are really good. And I just think that when it comes down to it, it's all about beating your man, beating your one-on-one matchups and creating that separation. As a receiver, that's all we taught, is to create separation, make your plays, and keep it moving. So I just think the 49ers have enough weapons to do that, to create separation, continue to move the chains. But I think it's going to be a great matchup with the Chiefs secondary because they got a lot of guys that are, you know, they're fast, they're athletic, and they make plays on the ball. So, you know, it's going to be, when that ball's in there, you're just going to see a lot of the guys competing for the ball. And I expect, you know, it to be a good matchup.
Do you have a pick? If you had to guess, Chiefs or 49ers?
I'm going with the Chiefs.
Perfect. I mean, I like
that. Next question.
Look, cut you off. That's it. Not now. So I don't need an explanation. Look,
me and Darnell got a homeboy that plays for the 49ers, Warren Central High School. I probably favor Ball State a little bit more than Warren. I love both, but I got to go with the Chiefs here, even though my boy Sheldon Day. But I explain your pick. I'm sorry I cut you off. Why the Chiefs?
Man, you felt that one.
I cut you off.
Nah, you good. I mean, shoot, I remember playing the Chiefs, and their offense is, you know, it's unmatched, and they got a really high power offense. And even when they're down 24, they're not out the game. And that's scary to me because the 49ers do a great job of jumping on folk, but then the Chiefs are just a good enough offense to come back and to continue to keep that progress growing. So it's scary right now.
I got to ask this question, man. Everybody up here fluffing, and I love you too, Willie Snead. But there's nothing better than winning except if you're the reason you're winning. And being a receiver with the Ravens, a lot of times we're watching these games like, dang, man, these tight ends are eating and them receivers are struggling. What's your level of frustration being a receiver at times in this offense?
It's up there, especially on game day. You know, it's the adrenaline's pumping, the emotions are going, and you just want to get into a rhythm. You want to get involved. But the way our offense is set up, the way Greg Roman runs it, is just it goes through the run game and through the tight ends. And then the receivers, we there and we, you know, we make our plays when we have to, and that's what they expect for us to do.
What you talked about earlier, that's the evolution team and the offense is going to have to make. I'm happy when we win, but when you're not getting the ball, you like, come on, man. They want to come talk to you. You really don't want to do an interview. And so is that the evolution that you were talking about earlier with Jason is we have to evolve and get myself the ball a little more and get Hollywood Brown the ball a little more if we're going to take that next step.
It's that, and it's also getting comfortable with making those plays and for Lamar to see those plays and continue to throw them, because once he's comfortable doing it, there won't be any hesitation for that. You know, he's comfortable throwing in between, in the middle of the field.
You're going to be open.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what he has to expect from us, to get open. So,
Willie, what are you, 26?
27.
27. And so, and I say this like as a Ball State big brother, speaking like you're eight, you got to make money in this league. You want to win, but you want to max out the amount of money you can make, and that is my concern. You were in New Orleans with Drew Brees, and you were on track, putting up numbers, and that's where I'm a little concerned. I think you got a one-year deal and a one-year extension. And so how much are you thinking about that in terms of, I got to max out my money in this little short window?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the clock is ticking for me. And, you know, I definitely want to max out everything that I have for this game. And I mean, Baltimore brought me in from New Orleans. I mean, I could have stayed in New Orleans, but Ravens was like, we need you, we want you, and I want to be where I'm wanted. So Baltimore wants me, they gave me a nice extension this offseason, a one-year deal, just to know that I'm gonna be here next year. And then I just take every chance at every opportunity from there. I know they'll give me more opportunities because they have invested in me. And, you know, as the hard worker I am, I'm just continue to put in that work and be humble and be a professional for these guys in my room. But I'm not worried about the production or the time. It's like, it's gonna come. And when it comes, I'm gonna be ready.
Well, I just wanna promise you this. If it ends for you in the NFL, I got a job for
you.
You
do it! Watch your head, dog.
That's my boy.
You putting us against us.
It can't happen, man. It won't happen. Yeah,
yeah. Better looking at you, dog.
Yeah. Hey, he worried about that money, but he got them chains tucked in right now. You're like, these chains ain't gonna pay for themselves.
Look at you, man.
What kind of teammate was Darnell, man? He walks around here, all he does is eat and lift weights, man. I'm trying to what kind of teammate was he?
Out the gate, man, when he first got the Ball State, all he was doing was eating weights, man. He was working hard, being a leader, man. And when I left out the building, he was that guy. He was the leader. Everybody looked to him, and I was proud of him because just to see his growth and to be the guy that he is today, everything he's doing, hey man, nothing but respect for you, bro.
My dog, man, appreciate you, man. Feeling mutual.
Whitlock and Wiley, Eric Mangini is back. Joining us now is one of the smartest minds in football, Warren Sharp from Sharp Football Analysis. All right, let's return to Patrick Mahomes, who has been pretty busy in his first two seasons as a starter, winning MVP last year and making it to the Super Bowl this year. A lot of teams slept on Mahomes in the draft, but the Chiefs actually traded up to take him 10th overall. And Andy Reid said yesterday that before the draft, Chiefs general manager Brett Veach told him Mahomes was the greatest player he had ever scouted. That made me think of the question, if Brett Veach saw it, how come no one else saw it? Why didn't everyone else see the greatness in Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah, man, I feel this one personally, obviously going to a small school and going through the draft process. And I think a lot of times evaluators can't believe their lying eyes. And I'm not even going to keep this so personal. I was in San Diego when LaDainian Tomlinson was drafted number 5 overall from TCU. And there were nothing but questions and criticisms really because of the style of offense, but more so where he went to school. So it's interesting when you look at players that go to these schools where we've seen other prospects fail, the USC quarterback, all of a sudden this generalization occurs where you look at that same player, not through the isolated scope of what their talent is, you start to take into other factors of, oh, but someone else from that school wasn't good. Oh, they always put up good numbers, but I'm glad that the Kansas City Chiefs organization in unison found the opportunity and used their minds to say this guy's special despite circumstances.
Well, I agree. I think you look at the conference that he played in and you look at the crutch of the coaching and the play calling that he had and some of those advantages. I think they use that, a lot of evaluators potentially use that as a knock against that player. You know, they think, well, how's he going to translate and transition into the NFL? We're doing pro style things. What is he going to do when he's forced to play within the structure of the offense? I think it's brilliant, first of all, that he was paired with a coach like Andy Reid, because Andy Reid maximizes so much of what a quarterback's able to do and makes that quarterback's job easier on him. A lot of coaches want to fit the quarterback to their system, but what Reid does very well is he tries to play to the strengths of that quarterback while also doing a lot of little things that go unnoticed on the big picture, but that really make that quarterback's job a lot easier.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons this happened. Why does Tom Brady get drafted in the 6th round? Why does Aaron Rodgers drop? Why is Ben Roethlisberger deeper in the draft? And there were a lot of people that liked Patrick Mahomes, and the reason Kansas City did trade up is because there was another team that was going to draft him right in that area. But if it was the best player they had ever seen, why wouldn't they have traded up even further? If there was really that conviction, why did they wait?
You have to.
Well, I'm just saying, after someone is uniquely successful, there's 1,000 people that knew it. You know, we drafted Darrell Revis, and after that, everybody said, well, of course we knew he was going to be a Hall of Fame cornerback. It's easy in retrospect to say, of course we felt that way, or we had this huge feeling. Why wouldn't you give up everything in your draft to make sure you got that guy? You don't have to. You can say you don't have to, but if you have that much of a conviction on a franchise-changing quarterback, you give up whatever you need to give up to make sure that he's in the building. So to say that he's the best player you ever scouted, but yet you sat where you sat, and you could have easily lost him. And look, for all the for all the geniuses, look at San Francisco. Didn't they draft Solomon Thomas instead of Patrick Mahomes? Ooh. So there's a lot of people. This is an imperfect science. So to say after the fact you had that conviction, I think it's a little bit easy.
I believe what Andy Reid is saying. There's no reason to lie here. They don't need to feed Brett Veach extra gas. Look, if you state that conviction and start, I'm going to move up to number one to get Patrick Mahomes. If you start making those inquiries, other people around the league go, damn, Kansas City sees something in Patrick Mahomes, and then they're going to go look, and the price goes up to get it.
You're going to get.
Yeah, you don't go that. You don't disclose that
information.
Somebody's
going to figure it out.
No, they're not.
You know how people figure stuff out is when you talk.
When you tell them.
That's the problem. And that's what happened to the teams that Kansas City traded ahead of. They talked all about how much they loved Patrick Mahomes. That's why Kansas City jumped him, and he's not in a different location.
Here's why I tell you the Tom Brady analogy is not right. There wasn't anybody that could say, well, I thought Tom Brady would be the greatest. There's not anybody that could say, I thought Tom Brady was going to be a Pro Bowler. Every team passed on him multiple times.
Okay, but there are a lot of people who said after the fact, we had him really high on our draft board, but so-and-so wanted to pass on him. You've heard it.
Yeah.
You've heard it. We had him so much higher, but we needed this, we needed that.
Listen,
if you're going to hit a home run, call your shot.
Look, okay, but I think it's stupid, and I would include myself in the stupidity because I didn't see this coming either. Mm. But when you look at Patrick Mahomes now, to me, there's only one comparison, John Elway. I think he walks like him. I think he moves like him. His arm and some of the things I see do on the field. And John Elway was such a can't-miss prospect. Everybody could see it. They didn't win a bunch of games at Stanford, but everybody could see it. They didn't win a bunch of games at Texas Tech. I don't know how professional people that it's their job to go. You look at this kid's arm. You look at the way he moves. Why weren't people saying, hey, I think we got the next John Elway here?
Well, I think that you're going to take a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes. If he's not with Andy Reid, he's going to be a stud. He's probably going to keep a coach employed for longer than maybe he otherwise should, but he's not reaching the ceiling like he is with Andy Reid. I think Andy Reid brings him to the ceiling. That air raid system, his mobility, some people look at that as a knock against Patrick Mahomes. You know, he's going to try to run around too much. He's not going to be patient enough. But in today's NFL, you can use those things. We're seeing it with Lamar Jackson. You can use a mobile quarterback. I actually favor a mobile quarterback, a guy who can escape the pocket a little bit rather than a guy who's a true statue down there, quarterback in the pocket.
Yeah, we have to respect that the NFL's culture is risk averse. It's safe then sorry. So if you look at it, we're all guilty of doing the same thing that the Chiefs end up doing, but most teams were scared to do, which is generalize. And in psychology 101 about generalizations, it's for you to be able to step back and say, I know what that is without stepping into it to know exactly what it is. And most evaluators won't do that because then once you bring back that evaluation, most people just want to hear agreement rather than, oh, I have something profound. So when you look at it, it's the same thing that happens when you say, oh, he's a Harvard student. Wow. You don't know how smart he is. You just say, wow. When you say Alabama football player, wow. When you say Texas Tech quarterback, you go, and that's where his evaluation started, unfortunately for him. But there's one team that went out there, rolled the dice, and made it happen.
I think that's a little bit of an oversimplification. I don't think everybody sits there and says, this is where he came from, so he must be like this. There is an element of that.
You don't think the players can hide behind?
I know how it goes.
Programs?
There are programs.
They're drafting programs.
For a long time, Ohio State was producing guys that were almost at the peak of their ability, and so you had to take those things into account. You had other schools where guys tended to be underachievers. It doesn't mean everybody fits that mold, but you use all that information to try to make the best decision possible. And you're talking about 22 and 23-year-old young men who are going to be rich, famous, and have a bunch of free time. There's an element of risk in every single human being you take with that formula.
I just want to say this, Eric. I mean, I think the people that watch the show know that I don't like Eric Mangini. He thinks he knows more about football than I do, and it really annoys me. Having said all that, I think I'm hearing a touch of skepticism about Patrick Mahomes. Are you not sold on him being the cream of all quarterbacks right now by a considerable distance, or are you a little skeptical of Patrick Mahomes?
No, look, I've been on this show enough times to know that you like to anoint people very early in their careers as being future Hall of Famers. I mean, I think we've done, I don't know how many quarterbacks we've done.
I was right about Carson Wentz, go ahead.
Yeah, who's home. Yeah. but you were right about a lot of guys, and the ones you aren't right about, you never talk about again.
Yeah,
but
they're not worthy of discussion.
But look, at this point, we're going to see where it goes. But to me, the difference between great and greatness is consistency.
Yeah.
So we'll see whether or not he has the consistency of the great quarterbacks over time to be in that discussion.
Oh, right now, like year one MVP, year two probable Super Bowl winner. That type of consistency, is that what you're looking for?
I mean, look, if 2 years for you amounts to consistency, then I think that's great.
How much more? He's only been a starter 2 years.
If that's all you need for greatness, I think that's fantastic. Should we evaluate Tom Brady's career on just his first 2 years his body of work? How do you want to look at that?
He can only do what he's afforded the opportunity to do. He's only had 2 years. Should he have been great for three?
No, we're discussing his future. We're not discussing his current situation, are we? Are we looking at it as a body of work?
You surely agree with me. Patrick Mahomes is the greatest thing you've ever seen.
He is the greatest quarterback in the NFL right now, and I think you can only work with what you've been given. He's done nothing but meet our expectations or exceed them in the NFL so far in his career. There's no reason to expect him to start failing. Him with his talent or with Andy Reid as still his head coach, those guys aren't going to suddenly derail themselves. I do see injuries potentially derailing him if that comes to it. But I don't see his talent
Florio,
waning.
You going Florio? You calling for injuries now?
No.
Mike Florio?
I'm massive on Lamar Jackson, and I'm massive on running quarterbacks. I think they're a massive edge to the game, Russell Wilson especially. I don't see any reason why a running quarterback.
You're not here with Marcellus suggesting Lamar is better than Patrick Mahomes.
No,
you're not.
Overall
you're
quarterback.
You're not that crazy.
Oh, really?
Lamar Jackson.
All he could do is play in Joe Flacco's offense next year, win MVP. But Lamar Jackson's not there. He's right there. What, two different tiers or the same tier?
They're both once in a generational talents, right? They're both one. I mean, we'll never see anything like they changed the game. Right? Just like RG3 changed the
game. Patrick Mahomes has changed the game.
I know he has.
He's here in the Super Bowl.
We'll see. We'll see over time.
He's here in the Super Bowl.
Whether or not that plays out. But every single year we talk about the once in a generational running back, the quarterback that changed the game. And then suddenly there's another once in a generation.
Eric, I treat you too well for you to come on this show and disagree with me. You know, I once bought him an $800 bottle of wine at Wally's. And this man comes on here and disagrees with me.
First of all, how would you evaluate him based off of that?
Exactly. Yeah.
That'd be points that we have to take off.
Joined once again by LeVar Arrington and TJ Hoops-Manzano, has returned to the Super Bowl. We're on Sunday. San Francisco 49ers offensive assistant Katie Sowers will become the first female coach to ever coach in a Super Bowl. Sowers says she wants to make sure she's not the last, and also said she absolutely believes that she could one day be an NFL head coach. I disagree with this assessment, but I'm going to bite my tongue for now momentarily and just ask you, think we'll ever see a female head coach in the NFL?
I think we will. I think we can, and I don't see any limitations to a woman being a head coach in the NFL. Let's break down the qualifications. Obviously, experience matters even more so than playing experience. We could look at situations where we saw coordinators or even head coaches, whether it's Bill Belichick playing in college at Wesleyan as a center, or you could look at a Todd Haley who never played at all. Whatever.
Hell of a golfer, though.
Hell of a golfer in high school. He was a beast. Talking trash, too. So the thing of it is, I think the natural evolution first is let them become a woman who is leading a position group. Always carpooling, but never driving. Let's be real. Every woman in the NFL right now is an assistant of something. It's time for one woman to become the leader of at least a group of men to give this real legs. And then all it would take is organizational support. Wouldn't work in Dallas because you wouldn't have organizational support to empower that head coach. But other organizations that are all in, I don't see how gender can limit you and lead men and inspire men.
I don't believe we'll see one. And it's what you just said. Nobody's going to take that leap and let them lead a position. If Belichick does it and it's successful, it could possibly work. But you can barely get a black coach. How are you going to get a female coach? And so...
So black women ain't got a chance, huh?
No, they really out in the cold.
It's over.
That's just the... Yeah. If you look at what Emmanuel Sanders said, she's one of the coolest coaches I ever had. I like being around her. Just about how she goes about her business. How he didn't say she was a great coach. He didn't say she helped me out football-wise. He's just talking about her as a person. And so it's going to take a very successful coach to go out on the ledge and say, I'll let her lead this position. But I don't know if they'll be trustworthy and have that type of feel that she can get the job done. So, no, we won't see that.
You know, I thought it was an easy no at first. And then with a lot of objectivity that has been involved with looking at the complexities within the sport of football, we'll see a head coach one day and possibly even in the National Football League based off of necessity more than anything else.
We won't see
it. Okay. I don't know how long it'll take, but we said ever, and that's what we ever. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe we won't see it, but in ever, that, being in that time frame, I think it can happen. Here's why. When you look at the participation numbers in the sport of football right now, if I were to ask these fine people behind me, when you're going to go decide to play football, the dad will say, what do you say?
Yes.
I want them to play. On one caveat. What's the caveat? Mom says what?
No.
If the mom allows him to play, he can play. All right? And I think there's something to that, because if these numbers continue to decline based off of moms not feeling safe and comfortable with their children participating in football, it will ultimately climb up the ladder, the food chain, all the way to the National Football League. You could get to a point, actually, critical mass, where the National Football League loses some of what it is that it has based upon the lack of participation and the lack of buy-in from the fan base. A woman being a coach could actually shift the entire narrative of what a mom may feel, may think, and may believe in terms of how their kid
participates. I think you make some good points. I think I always say football's a TV show. The NFL's a TV show. And if they think adding a female coach character enhances the TV show, maybe they'll do it. Because a lot of this, what they're doing, is for the benefit of the TV show. Bruce Arians has two women on his coaching staff. 49ers have coach. There's a movement afoot to make women a part of the NFL experience in a bigger and bigger way. I do think this will be tough to accomplish and to lead a group, an entire football team, but it is a possibility. I agree with Marcellus, though. Let's lead a group here. Right. Before you start talking about, you're a quality control assistant, maybe you hold a scout board and tell the players where to go on a scout team or whatever. Let's get a position group, then let's launch the dream to be a head coach. Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval rating for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Looks like he's
been in Rachel's wardrobe room. All right, first.
That's how trouble gets started.
Who's the big dummy of the day?
Say it with me. You. The big dummy of the day goes to the person that sat up here and actually put their GPA score up for everybody to see. 2.2. You's officially a dummy.
Some truth in that. All right, let's talk about my Chiefs, who are getting a ton of hype coming into Sunday Super Bowl. KC has the fastest and most exciting offense we've ever seen in a Super Bowl since the Rams' greatest show on turf. Marcellus, who's the better offense? Mahomes' Chiefs are the greatest show on turf.
Greatest show on turf. Not even close right now. This Chiefs offense not even good as it was last year. So let's just keep that real. So no, I'm going with the greatest show on turf, and it was almost impossible to slow them down. We'll see what happens on Sunday for the Chiefs.
Absolutely crazy. The Kansas City Chiefs offense is better than the greatest show on turf because the Kansas City Chiefs offense is still here. Marshall Faulk's retired, so it's turn one. Uncle Jimmy, 2. Back 2. Me up on this.
2.2.
Yeah, back me up on this. Patrick Mahomes, the Kansas City Chiefs, greatest thing we've ever seen.
Once again, nephew, here you go trying to be cute. Look here, man, because I got to hold you. I got to hold you accountable for your little wit log this morning.
What?
The Chiefs ain't the Beatles. Patrick Mahomes is Prince. That cute little light-skinned, curly-haired, freaky little kid with a high-pitched voice. That didn't nobody know what to make of him when he first showed up. Now, right now, we going through this Purple Rain season. See, remember when Prince came out with Purple Rain, then he made a movie, and then it turned out to make millions for him?
Yeah.
We didn't know what he was doing. Nobody saw the greatness. That's what we seen with Patrick Mahomes. Mm. You know, and I'm gonna stay with the spirit of this musical theme that you did.
Is this See, a Prince outfit?
See, I got something for my little
Chiefs
fans out here today.
Prince ain't never wore
I wrote a little something for it. Y'all wanna hear it?
Yeah.
Here it go. Check this out. Listen here. Listen here. Now, this is a song I wrote back in 76. That boy, Charlie Puth, came along and took it from me. I didn't get paid for that no more than I'm getting paid for my nephew. But anyway, y'all Chiefs fans, listen to this one here. I got a little ditty. Watch this. We're only one game away from Pat Mahomes from saving the game. Stop it. Listen here. Listen here. Let me tell you something. Let me say it all over. We're only one win away from Pat Mahomes from saving the day. Jimmy G got enough. We wanted them dogs all over him. Check this out now. Now, y'all know Tyreek Hill's the man. And we just want to give him love. So come on, come on, come on. Hey, and let's not forget that Kelce's a beast. And he ain't giving Sherman's old ass no beast. Hey, listen here. So Jimmy G. No matter where you go, the honey badger knows we're only one game away.
Oh, we've heard
the
enough.
The Prince have rhythm.
I thought we were
trying to game. Jimmy G got nothing on me.
Where's my approval rating? I got the Chiefs at a 79. It's not on my sheet, but I got them at a 79. 23 job performance. Anyway, 79. Almost GOAT status.
Oh, greatest show on turf in a 79? Nah, I gotta be higher than
you
that.
You only got 15 go seconds, Marcellus. What's your approval rate?
85, oh, man. Got respect status. For him. Yeah, GOAT status.
Oh, y'all punish the viewers with Uncle Jimmy.
Oh,
we'll
y'all
see
scared.
You tomorrow.